Mullen or Calder or who, somebody cooked up the idea. In the cover story, we knew that this weather blew.
What was your reaction to that?
You mean public reaction or?
No, privately. Just between you and Rainey.
Well, that was all right with us. I mean, if that's what
why not?
Sure, what the hell? It doesn't make you difference. Don't. I knew what we were told to do about the other material, and that wasn't going to be discussed under any circumstances.
Any talk about where they speculated it might be from?
Never any discussion, because as I say, that ended at the minute that McMullen told me, you are not to discuss this, and this is a point of which this is more than top secret, as he said. It's beyond that. It's within, as deputy to George Kenney, and he in turn responsible to the president, this is the highest priority you can exhibit, and you will say nothing, and that's the end of it. And Jesus, that's from the commander-in-chief, and you forgot about it.
Well, in case you're wondering, that was Mr. Don Schmidt interviewing General DuBose, who, of course, was the deputy to General Ramey at Fort Worth when the Roswell incident happened. And, you know, when I was thanking everybody for making this show possible right before the break at the hour, I forgot to mention our very good friend Dynamite D. Dynamite has been doing this show with me for a long time, and Dee, you have done such a fantastic job. He was gone last week. We missed him, but fortunately, he is back once again. And he makes things go so smoothly that sometimes you forget that he's even there, which I guess is a compliment. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Larry from North Hollywood on United. Oh, no, wait a minute. This is Larry Sorrentino.
Yeah, hi, Don. How are you?
Hey, fine. Larry was in here when we did the Vietnam show on July 2nd.
Yeah, I want to thank Jeff real quick. I got his tapes the other day in the mail, tapes of the show. Thanks for those. Couple of questions for either Lee and Ron about your satellite. Is it a single satellite or maybe two or three?
Well, yes.
Or can you say? Or will you have to kill me if you tell me?
Well, they could tell you, Larry, but then they would have to kill you.
Okay, all right. Well, their silence speaks.
There's volume one.
More, okay, I thought it was.
They're bigger. They're bigger than a bread box, but they're smaller than a greyhound, Larry.
And they're real good at catching snapping turtles.
Yes, there you go.
At any rate, I read recently about a happening that was in the Rocky Mountains that was picked up by one of your satellites.
That's right.
I missed the first few minutes of your show tonight, so if you covered that...
No, we haven't covered it yet, but as a matter of fact, this is a great time to ask you guys. A few months ago, there was an incident that happened in southern Colorado. As Lee, we've talked about this before, where evidently one of the satellites picked up an incident that happened that was displaying a tremendous amount of energy.
They thought it was a fire. They thought
yes,
it was a forest fire.
Yes, a forest fire. NORAD notified the Park Service people and the local law enforcement. They went out there and found nothing. There was nothing to find. And they said that whatever it was put off energy that they thought was covering at that point 3 acres.
Uh-huh.
Do you know anything about this?
No, but if you give me the date, I'll make a Freedom of Information Act request for it.
Okay.
And the azimuth and elevation.
Yes. Time, date, azimuth and elevation.
Well, by golly, we'll do that. All right. Okay, Larry, was there anything else?
No, that was pretty much it, Don. You asked my question. Thanks a lot. I'm sending your editor a letter. It's going in the mail Monday morning.
Okay.
All right, I'll enjoy your show, and thanks for taking the call.
Okay, Larry, and please keep in touch.
I will.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Jim in Eagle Rock, who's joining us on Sentry. Is this our friend Jim?
Hi, Don.
And we're back on up there.
Yeah.
All
Sentry's
right.
Back.
Fantastic.
Thanks to me and 100 other people banging them down on the door. But anyway, we're back.
Well, very good.
On that tape that you you broke on Larry King Live. There was a copy of it on the NAP tape number 3.
Oh, you're talking about the STS 48 thing?
It looked
like
a couple of objects were taking up out into space. Did that thing pick it up by chance?
Lee, Ron, he's talking about the STS 48 incident.
Again, we do not have direct access to these tapes. I would suggest to anybody out there, if they have a date, in a recent date and a time, then you make a Freedom of Information Act request to the government, tell them what you saw, and ask them if the DSP has tracked it.
Let me, if I can.
I'm not sure what the date was.
Okay, here, let me explain something. It might help everybody here. One, the DSP has a lot of data. And we fill up one of those big tapes. Remember the science fiction movies that were popular? They had the banks of tape recorders with the great big tapes about 18 inches in diameter.
Uh-huh.
We fill up one of those in about 15 minutes.
My goodness.
So to make sure we don't lose any data, we overlap about 2 minutes on each end. So you can see then that when it's printed out, you've seen the computer paper, 14-inch fanfold paper, the green and yellow and white stripes.
Mm-hmm.
That printout is about 6 inches deep for each tape, full every with lines of code. So every time we get a tape, we have to know the time. That tells us what tape to pick. Then we have to go through that thing manually, page by page by page, to find out what's going on. That takes time and it takes money. And so if you can give us the exact time, azimuth, and elevation, that can get us down to about 3 inches of paper, and that would be a big help.
Well, I'm not sure what the time was.
Well, that particular incident happened on September the 15th, 1991, and it happened over Australia. It was between Australia, I believe, and the Philippines. I'm not sure what the time is, but that could certainly be narrowed down. All right, Jim.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, my friend. Let's see. Let's go to Jeff, who's calling from Panorama City. On United Artists. Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening. Two quick things. First of all, some of the things you're talking about are in the August edition of Omni.
Right.
Thank you.
And some of the things, like you were talking about the Tehran incident in 76.
Yes.
They talk about it there. They give a few details, like it was flying at 40,000 feet, so on and so forth. But it pretty much covers what you're talking about in case anybody is interested in getting...
Well, yeah, Ron Regier, who's one of my guests in here, Jeff, tonight, and Lee Graham were both quoted in the Omni magazine you're talking about.
Yeah, so for people that are interested in reading about it, too, it's out right now. The other thing, I wanted to give you an update on Howard Menger.
Howard Menger?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I spoke to you about him last week. I got a video from him, and I have a book, and he shows a couple of devices sort of floating around up in the air that apparently seem to be working by some sort of anti-gravity system that he's developed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does he have a patent on it? Did he get it from his space friends on Venus?
Have you ever thought about checking in deeper into some of these people that speak about these things?
Oh, yeah. If you've been reading UFO Magazine for any length of time, you'll know that we've done numerous and many and varied investigative pieces and, in some cases, exposés on people in the field. Howard Menger, of course, goes back many, many, many years to the 50s and was one of the very well-known contactees of that period. Along the same lines as George Van Tassel, George Adamski, and some other folks that were very well known in contactee circles. Menger's story went through numerous and varied changes, and he also, in a number of public forums back in the early 60s, came out and admitted that some of his stories that he was telling were not quite the way he originally described them. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I think I understand what you mean. So what do you think about his claims as to having made several anti-gravity devices and is interested in people that...
Well, you know, Menger was a sign painter, right?
He makes neon signs.
Yeah. Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but somewhere along the line, I don't think there's an extensive area of physics that deal with anti-gravity when you're painting signs. Now, I could be wrong.
Jeff, if you had developed an anti-gravity device, don't you think you could demonstrate it so that people would go crazy and buy it?
Chances are the government would abduct me.
Well, wait a minute. He's sending you films, right? Videos.
Yes.
Well,
and now it's nationwide. The whole nation knows about it. But he's still alive and well and poor. Ah, there you go. Well, you know, I think Yvonne is waving at me. She wants to do some more. I'm sorry. What am I saying?
She looks that way to the class.
Renee. Renee is waving at me. She's saying, Don, it's time to do more phone numbers. We're going to move along. Jeff, I want to thank you for your call. And now, I guess, while we're doing the phone numbers, I'm going to get slapped around. So go ahead, Renee, and take it away.
Days to get...
And we are back. The phone lines are lit up. Let's see. Let's go to line 3. We've got Carla calling from Sylmar and King, and she wants to talk to Dwight. Good evening, Carla.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hello. I just wanted to tell you that, Dwight.
Yes?
I just wanted to tell you that my husband and I really enjoy you in Star Trek, but when you were on the A-Team, you were absolutely hysterical. I mean, we just absolutely loved you.
Well, I had a great time on that show. I did.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I bet you could tell. I just hope that maybe sometime in the future you do something like that again, because you know you missed your calling.
You know what, Carla?
What?
Carla, this is Don. You know he's like howling Mad Murdock in real life.
I mean, I missed my calling. It was a national television program. I am an actor.
Well, you know what I mean. I mean,
what else should I have been?
No, yeah, you're wonderful.
Well,
we just loved you, both my husband and I.
Thank you very much.
And I wanted to tell you that. I wrote you a letter once to tell you that, but it's better to tell you over the phone in person and just let you know that there's people that appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I do.
Well, you know, we like him, but you know what? You know what he does?
What?
We always, we have a thing now where we always have dinner before the show.
Uh-huh.
And he usually has us laughing so much, okay, before we come over here to the radio show, that everything after that is anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I say? Carla, I want to thank you for your call. We are going to move along. Hey, keep listening and keep your eyes to the skies.
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Greg, who's calling us from Van Nuys on United Artists Channel 41. Is that right, Greg?
That's a new channel. That's right, Don. Hey.
All right. How you doing?
Okay. Listen. Hi, Don. I'm sorry, Dwight. And is it Lee?
Hi.
And Ron.
And Ron.
Okay. Listen, I feel like I'm going to throw a monkey wrench in everything, but this is a question I just got to get out of my system, okay?
Well, go ahead and spit it out, my friend.
Okay. I was listening to a radio program a couple of 3 weeks ago.
Was it UFOs Tonight?
No.
Why not?
Well, it was a Friday night talk radio program.
Oh, it was on Friday night. Then right. It must have been Talk Trek with Joyce Mason.
No, it wasn't on CRN, but that's besides the point.
Well, why weren't you listening to CRN, Greg?
Well, I listened to it 24 hours a day. Anyway, there was one ufologist on there and someone else who was concerned about secret government activity. And the ufologist, I don't know if you're familiar with him, his name is, I think, Phil Jenkins?
No.
Okay, well, anyway, they didn't agree on a whole lot, because the talk show host was a real skeptic, but one thing they all agreed on, one of them called President Clinton a Marxist, and they all seemed to agree with that, and they all expressed their dislike for President Clinton. And Don, I'm well aware of your affection for the president.
Oh, I love dope-smoking, draft-dodging woman.
What I like to know, Don, I don't mean this with any rancor or anything like that, because I love your program, are all you follow just Clinton bashes?
Oh, well,
good they are.
Well, you know, I received a letter. I received a letter a couple of weeks ago from one of the listeners of this show that told me that they weren't going to be listening anymore because they didn't appreciate my half-baked political commentary. Now, I want you to know that it's not half-baked. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to bake it the whole way. Okay?
Okay.
I mean, but you know, hey, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And when you have a radio show, what the hell's the use of having a show if you can't voice it once in a while?
I'm not arguing with your opinion, Don. I just want to do all you followed, you know, kind of agree with that.
I hope so. Uh-huh. I certainly hope so. But then again, Greg, most ufologists, the only thing they agree on is that they disagree with everybody.
I don't want to put Dwight on the spot, but...
Well, go ahead.
Do you have an opinion about that, Dwight?
All ufologists or
about
president?
About our president.
I would like to say about our president that he isn't.
I guess I answer that.
I think I personally have a very hard time believing anything he says, and it makes it very, very difficult to listen to him when he's on the television. I mean, no, really, I do. That's it. He has told many fibs. My mother used to call them fibs, but he's fibbed about everything. I mean, absolutely.
Those were the mice.
But no, he has fibbed about everything, and unfortunately, they're all on the record. He can't escape.
Well, is he the first one that ever did that?
To this extent, yes. This is the first time in my life that I have pined for a politician who straddled the fence, who didn't look directly into my eyes on that television camera and not care about what I thought about whether he was lying or not. He just speaks. It doesn't matter to him whether I think he has no integrity or whether I can catch him in a lie. And that makes me want somebody who at least says, well, if he catches me in a lie, maybe he won't vote for me. Or if he finds out I'm not telling the truth, he might not think I'm a nice person. But this guy just lies. And past presidents had a little class in lying. Because politicians lie. They can do it legally, you know. But this guy, he's overstepped his bounds once or twice.
Dwight, your veins are sticking out. Your veins are sticking out in your
My
neck.
Veins are sticking out. We're not going to tell you where, but they are sticking out. All right?
Greg, did that answer your question? You thought I was bad.
Well, no. I just want you to know, I will keep listening.
Thank you.
And I hope we're still friends.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Listen, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This is political views. You know, we express them. This is what the country's about.
Okay. I love you.
No.
Good
talking to you. Take care, Greg.
Bye bye.
Let's go to New York. We got John from New York joining us on satellite. Good evening, John.
Hi there.
Are you a voter for Bill Clinton?
No.
Oh.
No. But I'll tell you what it's going to happen, Don.
Okay.
He's going to have to do something to be reelected.
Why? Well, I think he would.
And right before the election, he's going to disclose what UFOs are.
Well, you know, Dick Hoagland in 1992, now let me tell you a prediction that Hoagland made on the Chuck Carter show, or no, wait, I'm sorry, it wasn't, I'll be honest, I forget what show it was, but I know at the time he was still doing a lot of shows on Chuck Carter before they had a falling out, but he predicted that when Bush and Clinton were running against each other, and of course Ross Perot was in there, that Bush was going to announce that UFOs were real, which would be such a tremendous admission by a president of the United States that he would be elected. Now, of course, he didn't, and he lost. Then Dick Hoagland thought, and incidentally, he's going to be on this show again in 2 weeks. Dick Hoagland will be on August 13th. Then he thought that President Bush would sign a thing of martial law, a declaration declaring martial law, which at the time Hoagland thought he would be able to keep the presidency by doing that. And of course he didn't do that either. So if Clinton is going to do that, it would be interesting to watch. Now, you know, there are a lot of people right now that are claiming that there are all kinds of foreign troops and foreign military equipment in this country. I just read today in a more fringe newspaper that was talking about the Soviet T-72 tanks and what have you. Have you heard any of this material? Have you followed any of this?
I have not.
You have not? Well, you know, various talk shows around the country have been talking about this. Art Bell has discussed it in some length, Chuck Carter and some of these other programs. Limbaugh may have even at one point or another talked about that. Did you hear any of that?
No, I haven't heard that on Rush's show.
Yeah, but you are aware of what I'm talking about.
I have heard it, yes.
Paranoia. It boils down to paranoia. Paranoia is running rampant, and there's got to be a reason for it.
I can't imagine what reason it could be. Can you? Any thoughts on that?
Well, we don't know that it's true.
If it is true, for what reason?
Well, if it is
speculation,
I haven't seen
tanks.
People would know about it. I mean, this—it's tanks.
But there is actually foreign military equipment. I mean, I've seen the photographs that have been shipped around the country on trains and what have you.
Unless they're worried about terrorism or something.
Well, I think what the suggestion is that if martial law is declared, the suggestion is that American troops would not fire on American people.
The war games that the U.S. and the Soviets were supposed to take have in the Soviet Union were canceled recently. So it may have been some kind of reciprocal. When we were going to be over there, they were going to be over here, because that's the way they like to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to exchange military for war games. I mean, it might have been something like that.
Well, the conspiratologists, what they've been saying is that that foreign troops have been brought into this country because they would have no compunction about putting down American citizens. That's been the suggestion. You know, I personally don't think there's any validity to it.
I don't either.
But that's what that's what's been going on.
Well, that's what had happened with China. They were reluctant to do anything.
Right.
And same thing with Russia. You had the same kind of thing.
Well, the difference between China and Russia and us.
I think we have a National Guard here. I think it would be very difficult for this country to bring in foreign troops with the number of guns that we have in this country.
Exactly.
It just doesn't make sense.
No, doesn't. Oh, the reason I called, you were mentioning gravity. I guess nobody has, does anybody really have any idea what gravity is?
I can tell you what Bob Lazar said it was.
What A waves and B waves.
Einstein his theory of relativity.
Gravity waves and so on. And, you heard, you mentioned this guy that worked on neon signs, and this brought something to my memory here. There was a kid in Canada for a science fair project. I saw this on TV a year or two ago. He had done something with high voltage. And he said it made it something, made something way less. It was very, very minuscule. Now, whether his high voltage was affecting the scale, or I don't know what he was doing to measure something, but apparently high voltage. Now, neon signs use high voltage. So this guy would.
Are you saying that Howard Menger's brain is weightless?
Well, just a thought that this science project this kid did. Did something to make something way less using high voltage. So maybe there's something to it.
Well, I'll give you a better one. How many health shows are on the air today? You know, people, exercise shows, all this kind of stuff.
Good God, every time you turn on, there's something that's going to kill you or something.
Exactly.
Everything is health.
And people want to lose weight, right?
Mm.
You have all these people that are overweight that want to lose weight. So they weigh something, don't they?
Yep.
Where does the weight go when they lose it? Okay. Where does it go, John?
Well, I have a wood stove, and I put wood in there. I mean, I struggle to put some of these pieces there so big. And a little while later, I open it up, and there's nothing there.
That's amazing.
I can't understand. Where does it go?
I don't know, but you know what? I'll tell you what. I've got a whole list of phone calls. We got to move along. Hey, I want to thank you for your call, John. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we've got a minute and a half.
Where did he go?
To take another one? He went away. I hit the magic button. Let's see if we have time to take another quick one before the half. Tony and hello, is somebody there?
Yes.
Oh, who's this?
This is Nick from Arleta.
Oh, Nick. Okay, they didn't even put your slip up there yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they did. Okay, what's on your mind?
I wanted to tell you about an incident that we had here in Arleta about December 9th, 1990.
Okay.
That myself and about 15, 20 people had seen in about four or five objects in the sky and such. It was quite a wild thing.
Were these objects hovering, moving, what?
Yeah, they. Well, first a friend of mine had come in. We were getting ready to watch the Mike Tyson fight.
Uh-huh.
Tyson had just lost prior to that.
If he hit you, you'd see things in the sky.
Well, no doubt. But we were getting ready to watch. It was after he'd lost Buster Douglas, and it was just. And what had happened is
30 seconds, Nick.
Well, we were just out front, watching, getting ready to watch the fight, and here these objects appeared, and we couldn't believe that we'd seen these objects out in the sky. There appeared two of them, then they separated and became four, and then they progressively became larger, and they came right up, almost right upon above the tree line above us here, where they were like a bright red fluorescent. And
5 seconds. I hate to rush you, but we are right now at the half hour.
Well, it was, put it this way, it was a pretty incredible incident that we still talk about it to this day.
Okay.
And
did you call the police? Did you call the Air Force?
Yeah, I checked all the local Air Force at air bases and everything, and they verified that nothing was in the air at that time.
Well, we are right now at the half hour. We've got to take that break. Nick, I want to thank you for
all right,
your
sir.
Call.
I listen to your show, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Keep looking up and give us another call again. All right, we are now going to take that break. We will be back shortly. My name is Don Ecker. The show, UFOs Tonight, you are listening to the Cable Radio Network.
Whole flock of microphones there. They wanted me they wanted some comments from me, but I wasn't at liberty to do that. So all I could do is keep my mouth shut. And General Ramey is the one who told the newsmen what it was and to forget about it. It was nothing more than a weather observation balloon. Of course, which we both knew differently.
That, of course, was Major Jesse Marcel, who, in fact, probably did more to give credence to the idea that something of a high strangeness crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. And we want to thank Mr. Paul Davids for all those clips that he provided to us. Well, Ron, Lee, we with these phone calls, we've kind of gotten away from the original DSP subject, and we've kind of hit all around the clock. What do you think is what do you two gentlemen think is one of the most important aspects of this from your perspective? You both work on this system. You are in the aerospace defense industry. You gentlemen both have security clearances. There are aspects of this system that you cannot talk about. But yet you both have a very serious interest in the overall unidentified flying object phenomena. What do you consider to be the most important parts or aspects of this?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm still searching for knowledge.
In 25 words or less.
I'm looking. I got into this business back in 1961 as a result. Excuse me, 1963, but I really started in 1957 in October after the Soviets launched Sputnik. I'm trying to figure out how all this stuff works, and that's what I'm most interested in. It's just so interesting being a part of
how it all works. Are you talking about UFOs?
I'm talking about UFOs, high performance aircraft, all these things, even a 1994 T-Bird.
Let me ask you this, Ron. Then this seems to be a legitimate question. You've been working in the aerospace industry for how many years?
33 years.
33 years. You have a deep interest in the subject of UFOs. I know that from knowing you for a number of years. Do you give any credence to the suspicion that our secret black projects section of the defense industry, that area that sucks up anywhere from $25 to $40 billion a year in black budget projects, do you give any credence to the idea that our people may have recovered alien technology that they're attempting to duplicate or incorporate into our present systems today?
I haven't seen any results of it, but I wouldn't be shocked if there was.
Let me answer that for Ron.
Ron was the one that suggested to me after I was shown the Project Snowbird document by Bill Moore that I go back to Bill and try and get a copy of it. Ron is the gentleman that stamped the unclassified copy of the Snowbird document. So yes, definitely, Ron and I have been involved with this for some time.
So you do not dismiss the idea that somewhere within our vast military-industrial complex, that sometime over the last half century, it is very conceivable that the United States military recovered technology from somewhere else, and I mean somewhere other than this planet, and that they have been spending many, many years attempting to decode this alien, for the want of a better word, technology, and incorporate it into our own defense systems.
Very definitely. It seems now that the Project Aquarius document is indeed genuine. I have a letter here that's from the Albuquerque Department of Energy that suggests just that.
A few years ago, in UFO Magazine, we ran a several-part story by a gentleman who was trying to make a case that our B-2 bomber may, in fact, have capabilities that we would not normally associate with.
Tony Gonzales of Rhode Island.
Yes, mm-hmm. Tony Gonzales of Rhode Island. Gonzales claimed in the pages of UFO Magazine. Later, he then denied it, but he claimed that the B-2 bomber was a result of alien technology, that it enabled this craft to hover, to move in erratic ways, and in fact had electronic devices on board the bomber that were hybridized from the alien technology. Ron, you were on the various computer systems when he was on there. What can you tell us about that?
Tony and I disagree. To be very blunt,
Tony also tells untruths.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't go so far to say.
I would.
What I would say is that after lengthy correspondence and including several long distance telephone calls in each direction, he conceded that the B-2 that was shown at Palmdale and has been shown in all the magazine articles and that friends of mine have worked on is not the same B-2 he was talking of.
Oh, there's more than one B-2?
Apparently there's an alien B-2 and then the stagecraft E-2 that they wheel out for the press.
I see. Okay. Well, hey, this is a great time to take some more phone calls. Let's see. We have Wanda, who's calling us from Fullerton on Comcast. And Wanda, I want to thank you for your patiently waiting.
Well, that's all right. There goes another Saturday night. Listen, three quick comments and a question.
Okay.
Number one, for those, there's a lot of people who don't realize what happens to weight when it disappears. All of a sudden, liquid, and then you know what happens to liquid.
Yes.
Okay, we got that. As far as
so in other words, there's a lot of fat floating around in the atmosphere, Wanda? Is that it?
Something like that.
Okay.
Okay. Your troops. I don't know about troops, but we do know that definitely that other countries send their military here to train to be military police. There's no doubt about that. But as far as a bunch of troops, I don't know about that. The other I do know for sure.
Okay.
And as far as Bill Jenkins is concerned, he used to be on, I believe, Saturday night on one of the major stations here in Los Angeles.
He was on KABC.
KABC, yeah, and talking about all kinds of strange things, including UFOs. Okay, so much for poor Bill. I haven't heard from him for a long time. My question is, I was watching a program on the Aurora Borealis, and because of the nature of this, I'm wondering, has there been any sightings of UFOs in the area of the Aurora Borealis, or do you think they're staying away from there because of the magnetism in the area?
Well, that's a great question, Wanda, and my best answer is I don't have a clue.
Well, I'll keep listening, and maybe you'll come up with it. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Well, thank you, my dear.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's see, Tony in Whittier on Salmons. Good evening, Tony.
Hello, Don.
How are you doing tonight?
Is that Dwight Schultz there again?
Yes. Good evening.
Hey, Dwight. It's always good to hear you. I've been listening in the background, reading the mail. And, yeah, definitely. I'm playing around with my CD-ROM, the Discovery Channel Interactive Journey. And I kind of find it hard to believe we went from a wheel to a CD-ROM in 50 years. But, you know, I think we give ourselves way too much credit. Something definitely helped us.
Well, that's not necessarily true, Tony. You know, I've said this now maybe 500 times. But in 1941 in September, my father lied about his age and went into the State Guard, which today we would call the National Guard. He went into an actual cavalry unit with real live horses. Now, he told me he did more cavalry work with a shovel behind the horses than he ever did riding one, okay?
Okay.
But the Army still had a real had a lot of cavalry. And yet, within 4 years, we had gone from horsepower to nuclear power. We had designed, developed, and created and used an atomic bomb. Think about that. In 4 years, and that's almost beyond comprehension, but we did it. So never sell the human race short. We're a pretty clever bunch.
Yeah, we are clever, you know, but it's easy to make things go boom. It's hard to make things repeatedly work for years at a time and store data, and the ability and the level of the technology of the processors is way beyond any kind of effort of a team of engineers. You put them together, they fight like a bunch of chickens. You know, I just can't believe that all the technology that exists.
Well, you know, don't think that making things go boom is the same as designing an atomic bomb. Mr. Schultz here starred in the movie Fat Man and Little Boy with Paul Newman, and you portrayed Robert Oppenheimer, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And that was no easy task when those guys designed that bomb, was it?
Well, no, of course it wasn't easy, but it was also, when you actually look, it was so primitive. I mean, literally, they put the plutonium in a lead case in the back of a sedan. It was getting hot as they were going to the site for the first test. So it was very primitive. They didn't know it was going to work.
But that was one tremendous scientific achievement.
Yes, it was. But they didn't know that it was going to work. Sometimes you have to also realize that when you look at the computer, because you're talking about computers, compact discs, CD-ROMs, they're all zeros and ones.
Yeah.
Zeros and ones, faster and faster and faster. It builds on itself.
Exactly.
What's happened over the years, you have people making things go faster. And well, with that comes more and more information.
That does tie in, though, because you see, just like the car, they invented the car and they've made lots of different models, but it's basically the same thing. With the computers, they just keep getting faster and faster, which kind of lends towards the theory that there was some cooperation and it was cut out. And then we just have kept developing upon what we were left with. That makes sense, or whatever we found. But getting back to the DSP thing, I don't know if any of you guys saw any of that film that they showed earlier in this week from Mexico with that big plane flying and a UFO flying next to it.
No, I didn't see it.
Okay, yeah, they showed that, and they're going to have this thing Monday. You probably heard on Area 51, Channel 4,
yes.
5 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, they were showing that, and I saw the films, and it looked pretty good. They did some computer enhancing by some reputable people.
Who they?
I can't remember which program it was on. You know how they do that to you, Inside Edition. You look, and you're channel surfing, and all of a sudden, bam, you know.
One of the tabloids. One of the tabloid programs.
Yeah, someone calls and says, boom, look, you know, this certain channel, and you flip it over, and there it is, you know, and they're showing this, you know. So I'm sure you'll see more of it. But shortly thereafter, I saw another piece where they just discovered this new phenomena called atmospheric tornadoes, or like electrical storms going off, and they showed a picture from some height, altitude, and they look like little tornadoes going off.
Okay, Tony, my friend, we have got to roll along.
Okay.
I have literally every line lit up. We're down to 15 minutes. I want to
wondering if the DSP would pick that up. That might be.
Well, if it's giving off energy, gentlemen,
yes,
if it's
video
bright enough, certainly.
It's giving off light, so
there you go.
That would be one reason.
All right, Tony. Thank you.
Good night, guys.
You got
Good
it.
Good night.
Thanks a lot.
Let's go to Garesh, I believe. Is that the proper pronunciation, Garesh?
It's Garesh.
I'm sorry, Garesh. Okay, you're calling from Monterey Park.
Yeah.
Okay, on Crown Cable. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I think earlier on you were talking about Richard Hoagland. I think Richard Hoagland was talking about Martian law, not Martian law.
He was talking about what?
Martian law. As opposed to martial law.
Oh, well, no, we weren't talking about that. Yeah, but that's a good joke. I like that.
What I wanted to...
That was a time joke, though. It took me a minute to get it. But go ahead.
What I want really is a comment. I recently saw a movie called Official Denial.
Yes.
Any comments on that at all? I know probably one of Dwight's colleagues was in that. Dirk Benedict, is it?
I haven't seen it.
Official. It was on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, no. That's right. I think it's
Face
on
was
video.
On.
No, I didn't see it. I don't get the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, okay.
There you go. So it's when it's on a cable channel and you don't get that on your system, you miss it.
It's just been released on video cassette, I think.
Oh.
That's why I saw it on video.
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, okay. Did Dirk ever mention any interest in this subject at all, or just?
Dirk has an interest. Dirk is a pilot, and yes, he's he had an interest in this subject. He certainly did. He had never... Well, in Montana, they had seen quite a few things. There was a huge flap about 10, 15 years ago that he and his parents were involved with, a lot of the ranchers. But they, you know, they were told that it was nothing. I mean, basically.
A tremendous amount of cattle mutilations up that way, too.
Yeah, there was a lot of strange stuff. It's big country, very few people, and it takes you 2 days to get on your horse and ride to your neighbor and say, "Did you see that thing over that hill? I saw it, too. Goodbye, I'll get you some coffee tomorrow." And that's about it. But you call the Air Force, and they say, "Nothing happened." That's it. So you're left to wander in a cabin in the snow.
There you go, and time does march on. Gris, I want to thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Let's go to Vince in Tucson, who's joining us on satellite. Good evening, Vince.
How you doing, Don?
Just great. How about yourself?
Good. I have a question for you, Gus. The fact that we've suddenly detected something coming in from outside the DSP satellite, and obviously it had to be some kind of infrared source. Like when we launched the missions to the moon, normally when the rocket goes off, you see it in the atmosphere, and once they get it on a trajectory towards the moon, they no longer are firing their engines. So what is the source of whatever the craft is that's coming in from outside, I guess? You don't normally see meteors until they get to the atmosphere.
It's a very good question. We could ask that of the government. Why won't they tell us what the source of energy was that was propelling this thing?
That would be my question. That's it.
Well, you know, the other thing, Vince, that you could ask is if, in fact, there is no national security implication with the subject of unidentified flying objects, then why, for almost a half a century, have so many of these cases been concealed under the auspice of national security? You see, you got a catch-22 there. On the one hand, the Air Force says there's no validity to this subject, that it's all misidentifications, hoaxes, illusions, or natural objects that, you know, that are misidentified. On the other hand, you have military jet interceptors chasing these things, in some cases shooting at them. These objects coming in, breaching security and some of the most sensitive military installations in the world, i.e. nuclear storage areas, and they in fact do affect national security in one way or another. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. They either is or they ain't, and we're getting both stories from Uncle Sam.
I don't like it. Well, that's pretty much my question. If they had some idea as far as what the heat source was that was being detected from outside the orbit of the geosynchronous satellite, then.
Well, there was a rumor that there are 300 pages of information on this sighting. I can't confirm that, though.
Okay,
Vince, I want to thank you for your call. Keep looking up, my friend. Let's go to Ron in Medford, Oregon, who's joining us on TCI.
Hello, Don.
Ron, good evening.
Belated birthday wishes.
Well, thank you. How did you know about that?
I got a note of it someplace. Tuesday, right?
Yeah, this past week. Yeah, I was just another year older, my friend, you know.
I was wondering if your guests, Lee and Ron, could tell us the differences on the sensor array on the DSP to the ones that they were sent up on Clementine.
Oh, that's a good question.
As I understand, Clementine is a visual sensor, more or less what you call photographic, but it does it via different types of detectors. We use lead sulfide and Mercad telluride, which are heat sensitive, which is different from visual sensors.
Well, because the Clementine was originally an SDI sensor probe. That's what his initial task was before they planned the moon mission.
Oh, well, there's all kinds of sensors up there, all used for SDI. We happen to be the infrared plus others, but the...
You don't do
for
any
example,
sensors for that.
La Crosse's radar. There's other sensors that are visible light, KH-11s. So it just depends on what sensor system. And they're all part of the overall, what they call national assets.
Okay, gentlemen, we have got to stop now and take another commercial break. Ron, I want to thank you for your call.
Thanks, Ron.
Hey, keep looking up, my friend, and keep them eyes to the skies. Okay, my name is Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight. You're listening to the Cable Radio Network. Joining me in studio once again is one of our favorite people, Mr. Dwight Schultz, and my guests tonight are Mr. Lee Graham, Mr. Ron Reguerre, and the subject, even though we have strayed from it, have been UFOs and DSP satellites in space. And we are going to come back and close up the last 6-7 minutes of this program right after these words. And we are back. Let's see. We have Mary calling us from Simi Valley on Comcast. Good evening, Mary.
Good evening. I had a quick question for you guys.
Okay.
Earlier you had mentioned a UFO incident in Iran in the mid-70s.
Yes.
And I was wondering what happened. Did the pilots fire the infrared missile, or what was the eventual outcome of that?
No, they locked on to it. When they locked on, his panel went dead, so they were not able to fire.
Oh, you're kidding. So their instruments went dead at the point that they locked on to
it? The backseater's instruments went dead.
Oh, my gosh. And then was the object followed or tracked from that point, or did it disappear, do you know?
There were two objects. A larger object dumped out a smaller one that chased the aircraft. He went into a negative G dive turn to try and escape from it, and it went back and rejoined with the mothership, or whatever you want to call it.
Wow. Okay, well, that's what I was wondering. Thank you.
Okay, man. Thank you.
Don Manziel would have said that's a sundog.
and Phil Klass would have said it was a bolide.
He said it was Jupiter.
By God, Jupiter's shooting at us again. It must have been another comet hitting it up there. Well, guys, we're down to about five minutes right now on the show. Go ahead and give me your readouts on this whole thing. Ron, Lee, let's hear what you got to say.
Well, I had a very pleasant evening this evening. I wish we would have had a few more calls questioning capabilities and limitations of DSP.
Well, that just means we're going to have to do this show again.
That sounds good for me. One of the things that is important to realize is that of all the things that we have in space and all the things we work on daily, that none of these that I've ever worked on has involved, to my knowledge, any alien technology. As Don was saying before, never underestimate the power of people right here doing things. And we do some really good stuff. Most of it we can't even talk about.
Let me ask you something, Ron. You're in the aerospace industry. Lee is in the aerospace industry. And usually it's perceived that people in the military, in government, in aerospace, are very skeptical and very utilize a lot of debunking if people talk about real UFOs, unidentified possible spaceships. What has your experience shown you? Are there people within your industry that are sympathetic to this phenomena?
Yeah, believe it or not, engineers are people too.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you ask that because we haven't encountered that. The people we work with are very interested, and you might call them believers. Believers in the sense that there are other civilizations out there that have as much capability or more than we do.
Well, it only makes sense. My Lord, the universe is so unimaginably huge. Our galaxy is so unimaginably huge that anyone that would...
No, I think used is probably a correct word.
Well, it could be used, too. No, but you know, it's absolutely ludicrous to think that we would be the only sentient species anywhere in the cosmos. But still, we're talking about the idea, and we have to actually go beyond our narrow view. Another civilization we do not see today, how we would be able to travel to the stars in any reasonable time, or carrying enough energy with us to make it to the stars. That's not to say that other civilizations may not have already conquered those problems. But most people today on planet Earth consider the idea of star travel to be in the realm of fantasy. Now, I personally don't think it is, but people are not sympathetic, or have not looked at the database. And I find it unusual that people in your industry, especially after all these years of ridicule, would in fact think that there might be something here.
Yeah, as my grandmother used to say, it's a long walk from Iowa to New Mexico. And that's what she would tell us every time we'd ask her, well, how far is it? And my mother would say, walking distance. they walk from Iowa to New Mexico. That's maybe where we are in the space race right now. We've gone back to walking. We're no longer flying. That's a sad commentary.
Well, that's a great time to ask, why haven't we been back to the moon? I mean, think about it. We spent billions of dollars and lives to get to the moon. We go there a half a dozen times. 12 guys walk on the moon. And then we leave it forever. Does that make sense?
Definitely you ask not. A question like that with a minute left on the show.
Right. Have either of you seen the Richard Hoagland tape and photographs?
I've seen the photographs. I've not seen the tape.
You know, it's a very interesting exhibition. His exhibition. I was skeptical at first, but he has some interesting. He's caught some interesting things up there.
Okay, gentlemen, we are down to just a few seconds before the end of the program. Ron?
We're out of time. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Ron Lee, I want to thank you for joining us. Dwight, once again, coming by. It's been a great pleasure.
My pleasure.
Renee, Jeff, Dynamite D, another great week, guys. Hey, next week, we are working right now, believe it or not, to get the director of one of the most famous classic UFO movies in all of UFO history on this program. That's all I'm going to say. In 2 weeks, Richard Hoagland and the Moon, Mars Connection. My name is Don Ecker. Keep your eyes to the skies, and we will see you in a week. Incidentally, tomorrow, Roswell, the movie, 8 p.m. Pacific. Be there or be square.